kaj pa je to?
Ja, kultivator.
Gre za neko vrsto apatije.
To lahko reče samo kreten, noben drug.
Socialni invalid in ga je nemogoče urejati.
Drugi kandidat.
Pa pije, kadi, masturbira, vse kako niso lahko počeli. Nihče tega ne ve.
Vsak petek skultiviramo dogodek tedna.
Lahko po kriterijih Radio Študent, težko pa po evropskih kriterijih.
Ampak na drug način, kot vi tu mislite.
Kultivator vedno užge.
Da pač nekdo sploh omenja probleme, ki so, in da pač sploh nekdo sproži dogajanje v družbi.
To drži. Drži.
Drage poslušalke, dragi poslušalci in živjo fin. Z vami sva Tim in Blaž in v današnjem kultivatorju se bomo za nekaj časa preselili na zahodno obalo Južne Amerike, vse tja daleč v Peru. Peruju od konca leta 2022 predseduje Dina Boluarte, ki je bila včasih članica socialistične stranke Svobodni Peru. Po izključitvi pa je prevzela bolj desničarske nazore in konzervativna stališča. V času njenega mandata je bilo tako sprejetih več zakonov sovražnih do, na primer, transpolnih oseb. Tako so med drugim transpolnost označili za duševno bolezen ter prepovedali vstop v sanitarije glede na spolno identiteto. Danes je podpirata desna večina v perujskem kongresu ter perujske oborožene sile, sama pa svojo politiko sicer še vedno označuje kot relativno progresivno in zmerno levo.
Ok, pozdrav še z moje strani. Ja, se pravi, Boluarte je na oblast prišla v bistvu po poskusu nekdanjega predsednika države Pedra Castilla, ki je želel razpustiti perujski kongres. In še preden mu je to uspelo, ga je kongres obtožil, torej impičal, in Boluarte je prevzela mesto predsednice države kot njegova podpredsednica. To se je v bistvu zgodilo prvič v zgodovini države, prav tako pa je Dina Boluarte tudi prva ženska na mestu predsednice. In čeprav je služila kot podpredsednica Castilla, se mu je odrekla že v njenem prvem nagovoru kongresa. Za predsednika vlade je izbrala Pedra Angula Arano, nekdanjega državnega tožilca. Od prevzema funkcije pa do danes se je ta znašel v bistvu skoraj 13 kriminalnih preiskavah, ki med drugim vključujejo zlorabo oblasti, zlorabo javne uprave, zlorabo javnega zaupanja in izsiljevanje. Več držav Latinske Amerike, kot so recimo Honduras, Bolivija, Mehika, Kolumbija in pa Venezuela, so Boluarte v bistvu je niso prepoznale kot naslednice Castilla. Zdaj Gonzalo Alcalde Vargas, profesor na oddelku za državniške študije in javne politike na Papeški katoliški univerzi v Peruju, pa pove, da obstaja razlika med njeno politiko in pa njenimi politikami.
I think we would have to make a difference between her politics and her policies, because she was elected as the vice president of Pedro Castillo, who was elected in 2021 on a left-wing platform. He was a guest to the Peru Libre party. He won, and they of course had I think most people would agree it was a left-wing set of policies that they were proposing, a left-wing ideology. Dina Boluarte was a part of that party. Of course, that changed quickly because in January 2022, if I'm not mistaken, she was expelled from the party because of some things she said to the press to the effect that the Peru Libre was too radical and she was more of a moderate left-wing person, and she didn't agree with many of the things that they said. So she quickly distanced herself from left-wing politics. And what most people agree with, some of it has been in some journalistic investigations, is that she was very soon became close and was in contact with people from the mostly right-wing parties that control Peru's Congress.
Kot že omenjeno, je delno zaradi svojih ideoloških vzgibov, delno pa zaradi svoje pragmatičnosti, delovanje usmerjala vse bolj v desno. Več o tem pa pove Alcalde.
So, in terms of politics, it's really hard to characterize her. I would say her latest actions and even beginning in as soon as she took office really have looked much more like a right-wing politics and not a very democratic right-wing type of politics. Very very authoritarian tendencies, but at the same time very weak regarding Congress. So she's very she doesn't really have that much initiative, and she's seen as someone who's really is acting, trying to please some of the people who control Congress. And as we have seen this week, and has been seen for quite a while now, also trying to please some other powers like the military and the police.
Z njenim prevzemom oblasti pa niso bile nezadovoljne le nekatere sosednje države oziroma bližnje države, ampak je njeno predsedovanje sprožilo tudi množične proteste po državi. Ti sicer niso imeli nekega enotnega vodstva, ampak so zrasli iz različnih levičarskih skupin, pa tudi več staroselskih skupin, ki so Boluarte očitale politično izključenost teh skupin. A Boluarte sama je pri političnem usponu sicer rada poudarjala, da je tudi sama potomka prvotnih prebivalcev Peruja, ampak so to prepoznali kot zgolj neko propagando.
No, sicer pa njena politika ni bistveno drugačna od prejšnje ekonomske politike, je pa definitivno oslabila vpliv sicer prej razmeroma neodvisnega gospodarskega ministrstva.
And as far as her policies, she has kept some of the ongoing policies that Peru had throughout the last two or three decades, as far as economics, the economy. But she hasn't done very much that's new. And also, there's been some things that have been very concerning, like the weakening of the Ministry of Economy and Finance, which has been, you know, like the private sector, international markets, etc. And ordinary Peruvians recognize, I think many recognize that even if you didn't agree with Fujimori's policies in the 90s, most people will agree that some of the policies leading to fiscal discipline and leading to macroeconomic stability that were installed then have been good for the country. But in the last few years, and especially in the last couple of years, there's been a lot less discipline, and the ministry has been a lot less independent. It has been not being able to resist demands from Congress or other politicians to get money for this or that project. So it is seen as a much less technically oriented, much less solid institution. And that really affects all of policy. And
No, Boluarte je bila pred nastopom predsedniškega mesta v bistvu ministrica za razvoj v vladi Kastije, ampak je bila po besedah sogovorca precej neuspešna na tem položaju. Tako je nadaljevala tudi kot predsednica države, kar se kaže v veliki stopnji revščine, kot pojasni alkalde.
She was the minister of development and social inclusion from the beginning of the Castillo presidency. And then when Castillo had this coup attempt, which is also something we could talk about, and she became vice president, she put one of her closest allies, and she doesn't have that many of them, she put one of her closest allies as the new minister. So that area, the area of development, social programs, all of that has been under her watch for the last 3-4 years. I would say no, more than 4 years, because this is since July of 2021. And during that time, Peru has done very, very badly in terms of poverty. So I would say in terms of policies, and you know, beyond any discussions about even regarding human rights, but even in terms of policies, her government has been quite unsuccessful in terms of policies, because poverty in Peru is still above what it was before the pandemic. And she's been, and she's had a chance to do something about it for over 4 years.
No in čeprav se je predsednica na proteste odzvala z napovedjo možnosti predčasnih volitev, je njen obrambni minister razglasil 30-dnevno izredno stanje in na ulice takoj napotil vojsko, volitve pa so ostale nepremaknjene in bodo predvidoma še vedno izvedene aprila prihodnje leto. Izredno stanje je med drugim vključevalo suspendiranje nekaterih svoboščih, kot sta recimo pravica do združevanja ter pravica do prostega gibanja. V tem času sta policija in vojska ubili vsaj 60 ljudi in jih poškodovali več kot 600, aretiranih pa je bilo več kot 380 ljudi. Vlada je za strašenje protestnikov uporabila tudi taktiko podobni tisti iz perujske gverilske vojne v 80-ih in 90-ih letih prejšnjega stoletja, kjer so protestniške skupine označili kot teroristične organizacije.
Kasneje pa je posebni poročevalec Združenih narodov ugotovil, da teroristične organizacije, pa kakorkoli že definiramo, niso bile vpletene v proteste in da je bila to v bistvu navadna izmišljotina takratne vlade. Alcalde komentira, da je predsednica nepriljubljena ne samo zaradi pomankanja nekega napredka, kar smo že prej omenili v kontekstu revščine, ampak tudi zaradi kršenja človekovih pravic na teh protestih.
One of the main reasons is that, especially outside of Lima, she was perceived at first as someone who was kind of a traitor to Castillo and the people who elected her. That's one of the reasons, and that's why there were a lot of protests as soon as she took office. So that shouldn't be forgotten. But also, what happened during those protests was that 50 Peruvians were killed, and I think all of them, it can be proven or has been reported by the UN and Amnesty International and others, that they were killed while peacefully protesting, or some of them were not even protesting. So a lot of the unpopularity has to do with these abuses, human rights abuses, that took place against the Peruvian population, which she really, she said at 7 points that they would be investigated and prosecuted, but none of that has happened. So I think that is also a question. It's the lack of social progress, but it's also her this attitude and the human rights abuses.
Po protestih je perujski državni tožilec sprožil preiskavo zaradi obtožb o genocidu, umorih z otežvalnimi okoliščinami pa tudi o resnih poškodbah. V preiskavi sta poleg predsednice Dine Boluarte in premijeja Alberta Otarola še notranji in pa obrambni minister. Protestniki so medijem očitali tudi pristransko poročanje, desničarske skupine pa so napadale medije, ki so si drznile kritizirati vlado na kakršenkoli način. Perujsko ustavno sodišče kasneje sicer proteste označilo kot nelegalne in tudi odločilo, da ne spadajo pod to ustavno zaščiteno kategorijo shodov in protestov, ampak moramo tukaj upoštevati to, da je vlada predtem oziroma senat predtem zamenjal 6 od 7 ustavnih sodnikov. Sedaj pa prisluhnimo enemu komadu, s katerim bomo več povedali v nadaljevanju.
Puedes fingir pedir perdón en televisión, hacerte la desentendida en un mensaje a la nación, salir a hablar de paz luego de disparar, mandar saludos en quechua, chino y en alemán, puedes bonos regalar y acabar con inflación, puedes meter el gol que clasifique a la selección, pero nuestra nación nunca se va a olvidar, ten por seguro que aquí siempre serás. Asesina, Dina, asesina. Ya son más de 60 los que aquí no están. Ya son más de 60 los que no podrán cantar. Pero escuchas cada noche sus voces acusarte y luego las nuestras al despertarte. Dispararle al pueblo no se puede volver. Tarde o temprano a la justicia tendrán que responder. Mientras tanto resistimos con organización hasta liberarnos de esos miserables que asesinan. Dolor, solidaridad.
tole je bila pesem Dina Asesina, ki je še pred nekaj leti odmevala z ulic Limena v teh množnih protestih. Ampak zdaj nadaljujemo z ostalimi kontroverznimi odločitvami predsednice, zaradi katerih smo v bistvu danes tu. Torej, v začetku tedna je ta podpisala zakon o pomilostitvi, ampak da lahko ustrezno kontekstualiziramo to, se moram najprej vrniti dobrih 30 let v preteklost. Torej, ta zakon, o katerem bomo govorili, zakon o pomilostitvah, se nanaša na zločine zagrešene pred več kot 40 leti, torej med leti 80 in 2000, ko je v državi potekal spopad med državnimi oboroženimi silami in pa dvema gverilskimi organizacijama. Torej, prva je Shining Path oziroma Svetla pot in pa revolucionarno gibanje Tupac Amaru. V tem času je v spopadih umrlo več kot 70 tisoč ljudi, od tega je vsaka stran odgovorna približno za polovico. Okoli 3/4 vseh žrtev pa so bili staroselci, ki govorijo kečuanski jezik.
Ok, se pravi, zdaj pa lahko v bistvu malo predstavimo vse ti dve gverilski organizaciji. Prva je, kot si že omenil, Shining Path oziroma Svetla pot, ki je znana tudi kot komunistična stranka Peruja, hkrati pa deluje tudi kot gverilska organizacija, katere cilj je bil strmoglaviti vlado z gverilsko vojno. Ta Shining Path organizacija je bila ustanovljena leta 1969, med letoma 1970 in pa 1977 pa je potem naredila tudi študentsko organizacijo in ustanovila regionalni centralni komite. Leta 1980, ko so v državi potekale prve demokratične volitve po vojaški vladi, je ta stranka takrat zavrnila udeležbo na volitvah in začela z gverilsko vojno v regiji Ayacucho. V tem času je organizacija zelo pridobivala na članstvu in leta 1981 je vlada zato razglasila izredno stanje v treh andskih regijah, med drugim Ayacucho, Huanca Velika in pa Apurimak. Vojaške sile so zaradi teh izrednih razmer pridobile več pooblastil za pridržanje tako imenovanih sumljivih oseb, ampak so te pristojnosti močno zlorabili, med drugim so aretirali nedolžne ljudi, več so jih mučili in pa posiljevali. Zato je v bistvu gverila nadaljevala s svojimi akcijami, vključno z atentati na nekatere funkcionarje in pa z različnimi bombnimi napadi. Leta 1990 je imela skupina že okoli 3000 članov in je nadzorovala tako južni kot pa osrednji del države. Ob prevzemu mandata predsednika države Alberta Fujimorija je potem ta uzakonil, da lahko v bistvu skupine kmetov, ki jih je vojska v 80-ih letih usposabljala in pripravljala na bitke proti gverili, v bistvu so te skupine postale zdaj že v okviru zakona in so bile dovoljene in je te skupine preimenoval v tako imenovane samoobrambne komiteje. Teh je bilo do leta 2005 že več kot 7000, kar je več kot je bilo članov te gverilske organizacije. In leta 1992 je potem posebna obveščevalna skupina vlade aretirala vodjo Abimaela Guzmana, nasledil pa ga je Oscar Ramirez, ki je hkrati želel nadaljevati oboroženi odpor, ampak reorganizirati gverilo v bistvu in jo popeljati v nekak drugačno smer kot Guzman, hkrati pa se tudi držati njegove tradicije. Ampak potem, ko je Ramirez nasledil Guzmana, začne gverila počasi zamirati. In še predtem je vlada napotila na tista območja, ki jih je nadzorovala gverila, tudi vojsko in tako je spet več regij padlo pod to izredno stanje, zaradi česar so bile začasno prekinjene nekatere ustavne pravice, vojska pa je ob tem spet pretirano uporabljala silo, ljudi je mučila, veliko civilistov je ubila in nekatere primere zločinov, ki so jih storili pripadniki vojske in pa policije, predstavi sogovornik.
There were some major crimes committed, not only under Fujimori, who came in 1990, so that should be remembered too. I mean, it's not just his government, which was basically the whole of the 1990s. Also in the 80s, under the democratically elected governments of Belaunde and Garcia, there were a lot of, in fact, there were more killings in the 80s than in the 90s. So that should also be remembered. This is close to 20 years time. And this includes killings of entire or almost entire rural villages that perhaps were seen as too sympathetic to the Shining Path or helpful enough to military or police. And these killings included instances of mass graves where still hundreds or thousands of people's bodies have not been recovered. There are many organizations of civilians and relatives of these people who are still seeking justice. So that is very. So these people are, of course, very, very affected by this law, very, very angered at this law, and because there are still thousands of people who need to be identified, who are probably in unmarked or mass graves throughout the country, especially in the highlands and in the jungle in Peru, from these 20 years period. Also, there were some emblematic cases, even in Lima. For example, two perhaps the most well-known cases were the Barrios Altos massacre. Barrios Altos massacre was one where paramilitary command, or this command that functioned basically outside public institutions, which was the Colina, went into a family meeting, and they thought that this was a terrorist meeting, and they assassinated a number of people, including children, in Lima. And this was a very well-known case. The people there have been identified who were responsible for this, sentenced, and those people would be walking out.
No, potem druga gverila je bila pa revolucionarno gibanje Tupac Amaru, ki je bolj leninistično-marksistična organizacija, ki je nastala med leti 1980 in pa leti 1982, in sicer z združitvijo revolucionarne socialistične stranke in pa militantne frakcije revolucionarne levice, ki je prav tako nekdanja gverila, ki je bila poražena leta 1965. Ta militantna frakcija revolucionarne levice je vključevala tudi nekatere člane vojske, ki so se potem pridružili, se pravi, temu revolucionarnemu gibanju. V Peruju je potem, kot smo že omenili, pač vojaška vlada vladala do leta 1980, takrat pa so razpisali volitve, na katerih so sodelovali in jih poskušali organizirati tudi člani revolucionarnega gibanja. Na to v tem času med letom 1980 in 2000 so napadli ameriško ambasado, preobraženi v policijske uniforme, kar je delovalo kot protestna akcija proti širjenju ameriškega imperializma. Hkrati pa so tudi nasprotovali, se pravi, svetli poti, ki je druga gverila, tako da so v bistvu nekako nastala delitev, da svetla pot nadzoruje podeželje, medtem ko je revolucionarno gibanje bolj ostalo v mestih. Na to so leta 1996 zasedli japonsko ambasado za 4 mesece, ampak je kasneje Alberto Fujimori, se pravi predsednik države, naročil, da vdrejo v prostore in tako so ubili 14 pripadnikov gverile.
No, in zdaj končno pridemo do tega zakona o pomilostitvi, ki ga že dolgo obljubljava. In sicer, ta zakon predvideva pomilostitev za pripadnike vojske, policije in pa samoobrambnih komitejev, o kateri sem govorila prej, ki so bili preganjeni zaradi zločinov zgrešenih v gverilski vojni po letu 1980. To pomeni, da bo sedaj pomilostitev, pomilostitev sedaj uživali vsi, ki so bili prijavljeni, preiskani ali pa kakorkoli kazensko preganjani zaradi različnih kaznivih dejanj med gverilsko vojno. Tisti, ki so bili zločinov že obsojeni, bodo humanitarno pomiloščeni, če so starejši od 70 let. Po podatkih državnega koordinatorja za človekove pravice, ki ga sestavljajo perujske organizacije za človekove pravice, je trenutno aktivnih 600 takih primerov, v 156 pa je že prišlo do končne obsodbe. Vsebino zakona pa bolj podrobno predstavi profesor Alcalde.
Basically, it's pardoning people who had been sentenced to because of human rights violations, including murder, rape, in the period between 1980 and 2000. And during that period, there was around 70,000 Peruvians died, were killed, in the what could be called the internal war against terrorism, against the Shining Path and the MRTA, which is the other major terrorist group during that time. But according to the official report that was published over 20 years ago, about a third, or maybe, if I'm not mistaken, 30% of the deaths of civilians were because of the actions of the military and police and some paramilitary forces. So basically, Some of those people are in jail, but they're over 70. They will be walking out of jail soon. Some of those people escaped the country, so they were never prosecuted, and they will be okay. They can come back. And people who have not been prosecuted yet, then they will not be prosecuted.
Ta zakon je bil v enodomnem kongresu sprejet z glasovi poslancev ljudske sile, to je stranka Keiko Fujimori, hčerka nekdanjega predsednika Alberta Fujimorija. Nekatere organizacije za človekove pravice in družine žrtev zločinov temu zakonu nasprotujejo zaradi različnih razlogov, ki bo sedaj pojasnil profesor Alcalde.
That, of course, goes against all the commitments of Peru as a country that has signed human rights treaties and international humanitarian rights treaties. So definitely this is something that is seen as going against Peru's international commitments, both by the UN and the head of UN Human Rights has spoken about this, and also the Inter-American Court of Human Rights has also spoken out against this. So basically what's happening is that hundreds, I don't know if thousands, but definitely hundreds of people who have been sentenced or are presumed to have committed very grave human rights violations, including rape and murder, of women, children, people to a large extent in the Peruvian highlands, but all over the country, they will be they will be free from any prosecution, or they will be pardoned.
Naš sogovornik pove, da se je Boluarte za ta zakon odločila, ker v kongresu nima prave podpore in ker je tudi brez svoje stranke.
It's the fact that she doesn't have any representation in Congress. So she, the party that she was elected with, Peru Libre, basically expelled her only about 6 months after she took office. So as soon as she became president, after Castillo's unsuccessful self-coup attempt, what happened was that she had to approach all these different forces in Congress and other powers in the country to have some kind of a power base and something to stay in power. She doesn't have popular support, of course. She has close to zero popular support. She may be the least popular leader in the world right now, without exaggeration. And she doesn't have a party. She doesn't have representation in Congress. So basically, she's pleasing the forces that could support her once she leaves office, and she would be vulnerable, and she would be, she could be, and perhaps should be, tried for a number of human rights, of serious human rights violations. So she's basically trying to please people who weren't her allies 4 years ago, but who she's betting that they may still defend her when she leaves office, which is less than a year from now.
Sodna veja oblasti sicer ima neke možnosti, da zakon bodi si izpodbija ali pa ga ne upošteva, ampak so te po besedah sogovornika pičle. Kot že omenjeno, je ustavno sodišče vse bolj spolitizirano.
There are a few possibilities. One of them is that each individual judge, as he or she sees each individual case, they can also use their prerogatives to judge this law to be unconstitutional, for example, and not apply it to any specific case. So that could happen. Another is that the Peruvian Supreme Court could find it to be unconstitutional. But right now, that's one of the problems that we have, and that's a whole huge other subject, which is the weakening of Peruvian democratic institutions. So that not only the whole justice system, including the highest constitutional instance, are being packed with people who are sympathetic to some of the anti-rights figures. So that's less possible than the first one. Now, internationally, like I said, the UN, the internet, and also the international, the Inter-American Court of Human Rights have spoken, but President Boluarte very recently said that they would seek to leave the Inter-American Human Rights System.
No, profesor je omenil Medameriško sodišče za človekove pravice in to je sicer sodišče, ki ga je ustanovila organizacija ameriških držav leta 1979 z namenom izvrševanja in pa razlage določb ameriške konvencije o človekovih pravicah. Tako ima to sodišče med drugim tudi možnost zakon razveljaviti ta ali pa katerikoli drug. No,
no, perujske oblasti so sicer podoben zakon o amnestiji sprejele tudi leta 1995, v okviru katerega so policijsko in pa vojaško osebje zaščitile pred kazenskim pregonom za zločine storjene med konfliktom, torej tudi mučenja in umore. V tem primeru gre za časovno obdobje od leta 1980 pa do leta 1995. Nacionalni kongres je na to tistega leta sprejel drugi zakon, ki sodstvu prepoveduje odločanje o zakonitosti ali uporabi prvega zakona o amnestiji. In potem po koncu predsedovanja Alberta Fujimorija je na to Medameriško sodišče za človekove pravice presodilo, da zakona o amnestiji nista združljiva s to ameriško konvencijo o človekovih pravicah, katere podpisnica je tudi država Peru.
No, je pa lani kongres prejel tudi zakon o zastaranju kaznivih dejanj zoper človeštvo, ki so bile storjene pred letom 2002. Tako je kongres dejansko ustavil več sto preiskav domnevnih kaznivih dejanj storjenih med spopadi.
In the 1990s under Fujimori, despite the authoritarian attitudes of Fujimori and especially after his self coup in 1992, there was a much clearer group of organizations and parties that were active and institutionalized, working as a resistance to an authoritarian government, and of course, and to any attempts such as the amnesty law from 95 and other attempts in the 1990s. That is not as clear today. I wouldn't say that there's no resistance, but it's much less powerful. I have not seen any significant announcements of major mobilization in the streets, anything like that at all today. There's a higher degree of disaffection from politics, a higher degree of skepticism of what could be done through political participation and protest. So that has changed a lot in these past decades.
Ok, če povzamemo na hitro, se pravi, predsednica Dina Boluarte je ta teden podpisala zakon o amnestiji, s katerim v bistvu lahko pomilosti vse tiste člane vojaškega ali policijskega osebja, ki so v gverilski vojni med letoma 1980 in pa 2000 zagrešili kazniva dejanja, v katerih so pobijali, morili civiliste in pač med drugim mučili vse tiste, za katere so sumili, da bi lahko bili povezani z gverilskim vojno.
Na ta 15. avgust sva kultivirala Tim in Blaž.
E, kaj pa je to?
Ja, kultivator.
Gre za neko vrsto apatije.
To lahko reče samo kreten, noben drug.
Socialni invalid in ga je nemogoče urejati.
Drugi kandidat.
Pa pije, kadi, masturbira, vse kako ni človeka počne. Nihče tega ne ve.
Vsak petek skultiviramo dogodek tedna.
Lahko po kriterijih Radio Študent, težko pa po evropskih kriterijih.
Ampak na drug način, kot vi tu mislite.
Kultivator vedno užge.
Da pač nekdo sploh omenja probleme, ki so, in da pravzaprav sploh nekdo sproži dogajanje v družbi.
To drži.